Hello there. It's Ari Rosenbaum. Another week without Dan Venturi. Thanks to scheduling and whatnot, this is what we're going to have to do. So it's Ari here with another fun-filled episode of that 401k podcast. This week I want to talk to you, obviously, you know, I'm going to show the conferences that I have scheduled, but really discuss the problems of working with other providers in really the aspect of vetting them. Because I'll tell you some horror stories and whatnot, and, you know, stuff really that you have to avoid. But anyway, let's go to the shilling. Within a week from the time that you probably are downloading this episode, we will be at Foxborough, Massachusetts, Gillette Stadium, home of the New England Patriots. That's going to be on Friday, October 11th. That 401k conference emanating our very first football-themed event, which we're very, very excited about, and what better way than the Super Bowl champions, the six-time Super Bowl champions, the New England Patriots. We're going to have, of course, a speaker, speakers from quite a few plan providers. We have a guest, Matt Chatham, who's a three-time Super Bowl champion, stadium tour, you know, lunch and whatnot, and just for the advisor, $100 gets you all that. 4 hours content and how to increase your book of business. And we have some really great presenters. Lyle Hinball will be there, Dave Venturi, Kravitz, of course, and some others as well. Lincoln Financial will be there, Matt Pessler from Lincoln Financial, and Alan Valenka from T. Rowe Price will be there as well. It's a great opportunity to network. It's a great opportunity to learn something new on how to expand your business. And then after that, we return home, sort of, to New Jersey for MetLife Stadium, home of the New York Giants and New York Jets. Of course, since I'm a Giants fan, we're going to have a New York Giants-themed event. That's going to be on Friday, November the 8th. The guest will be two-time Super Bowl champion Sean Landetta. Again, lunch, you know, and whatnot. It's going to be another fun-filled event, and we hope that you can join us for that. We already have a good crowd in terms of the advisors signing up. It's very, very popular, obviously, since I'm local to the area. It's a great opportunity to learn about the advisory business, to expand it, you know, learn something new, new products. FPS Trust will be at all our events, and you can learn about their really exciting rollover solution on the automatic rollover front, which is new and exciting and different from what you've been expecting in the business. And then, of course, we finish out 2019 by being in Arlington Stadium, well, AT&T Stadium in Arlington, Texas. I always want to say Dallas, but it's in Arlington, Texas, home of the Dallas Cowboys. They somehow claim that they're America's team. But we will be there Friday, December 13th. Fun-filled event, great opportunity, and a great stadium tour that they have, by the way. So we look forward to having that event as well. And then, of course, in 2020, we will be at Walt Disney World Swan for that 401k National Conference, March 10th to 11th, 2020. Go to that 401ksite.com for that event, as well as all the other events to sign up. We have a great early bird special, $300 for an advisor or TPA who wants to attend as an attendee. We have great opportunities to sponsor the event. You're not going to break the bank and need a card, you know, need an entire bank loan in order to actually fund your sponsorship. Top of the line sponsorship is $15,000. And there's quite a few levels below that as well. So hopefully you can go to that 401ksite.com and, you know, sign up, find out all the information, find out who's speaking at which events. And, you know, we're really, really excited. The closer we get to 2020 is the closer that we will be able to announce who's there and whatnot. So anyway, this week's topic, like I said, is going to be about the issues of dealing with plan providers and the need to actually vet as to who you're working with. It's extremely important that you know who you're dealing with. And, you know, let's preface it by telling you a story right now. Right now, my community, I live in Oceanside, New York. And right now, there is a great disturbance in the force. as Oceanside Jewish Center, which is a synagogue that I used to belong to in the village. I left for a couple of reasons. But it was a synagogue that I first started at when I moved to the area in 1997. And within the past 22 years, the synagogue has slowly been dying. And if you've ever read anything that I've ever written about, you know about my opinions about organizations and the need to change with the times and needs to no longer use what is no longer working and probably find out new alternative ways to, you know, in the purposes of any civic organization or charitable organization, develop new ways to bring in new members, to fundraise, you know, little different things in here and there. And Oceanside Jewish Center for the last 22 years has done nothing. I think when I was a member there, when I first started out in 97, probably 600-700 families. Well, now they're down to 220. And this thing, again, this didn't happen overnight. If you look at articles about their Hebrew school, in 2001, they had 200 students. In 2010, they had 100. In 2016, they had 50. Now in 2019, they have 12. So this didn't come as a shock, but, you know, unfortunately, like most businesses that go under, long-term businesses like, you know, our friends at Sears, an organization that can't change with the times and doesn't try something new and sophisticated and interesting and original is going to die. So OJC and its lack of an infinite wisdom decided that they are going to sell half of their campus or half of their building, and they're literally going to sell half of the property, destroy their sanctuary, where, you know, my son had his bris, where I had a lot of events in my life, and, you know, when I was a member over there, and they're going to destroy it. They're going to raise it, and the school building that will remain, somehow they're going to turn that into a sanctuary. And so they decided that they're going to sell half that property to a developer. The problem is they didn't sell it to – they're not trying to sell it to a reputable developer in the area that we know has developed, you know, different construction sites and, you know, buildings and apartment buildings, whatever. They picked out a guy who's a YouTube personality. He calls himself – I think he's the happy home buyer. And he's the happy home buyer. And, you know, I'm not big, you know, my daughter's almost 13 years old. She's really big on the YouTube personalities. Well, you know what? I'm not. You want more steak to the sizzle. You just can't deal with the sizzle. You need more. And this is a guy who's a home flipper. And the only project he's ever developed is a medical building that I don't think he's even finished or even started developing. And somehow he's got the right to purchase this property. And, you know, the way he comes off, anybody who's over the age of 30 doesn't trust anybody who claims that he's handsome. Just because you claim that you're handsome doesn't mean make it so. And I think that when you, you know, make yourself, you know, I don't call myself the handsome worst attorney. Listen, I look at myself in the mirror every day. I wouldn't even call myself the half decent looking worst attorney. It's just not something that you want to, you know, find that your ERISA attorney is handsome or beautiful in the case of some of the well-renowned female ERISA attorneys. You want somebody good. And, you know, if you're selling a piece of property and you want it developed, you want to sell it to somebody with developing experience. So the problem here is I don't feel that, you know, there's no transparency in the deal. And we have no idea the background of this buyer or how he got this deal, because nobody has sensed that the part of OJC was up on the market. So no developer bid. There's a question of whether that bid by this developer would be the best bid available if it ever went to a competitive auction. And again, guy's got no experience. And, you know, You beg the question as to how did he come across this ability to purchase the property. And that's something that we're going to have to find out, whether, you know, the attorney general who's in charge of investigating not-for-profits, or he'll be be more forthcoming, or Oceanside Jewish Center, which has pretty much been having a bunker mentality in terms of talking about this transaction, comes forward and says this is, you know, how we came to deal with this guy. So until then, we have no idea. And, you know, did OJC actually vet this guy? I haven't run a background check. I wonder if I did, what would, you know, come up. But anyway, that really segues into what I, you know, talk about. You know, when you're dealing with other plan providers, trust is a big, big requirement. You know, and if you ever, you know, read anything I write, one of my biggest pet peeves is when I'm at a networking event, any type of networking event, and some advisor that I've never met before comes up to talk to me, and all of a sudden wants to see if we could collaborate or network or what, you know, see if there are any synergies. And when somebody says to you, we want to explore synergies, they want to look at my clients and see if I could recommend them as an advisor. First of all, most of my clients come from an advisor or from a TPA, and there's an advisor attached to the plan. And second of all, if I ever did come across an opportunity where there was no advisor on the plan, 20 years in this business, I'm not going to recommend somebody I just met. You just don't do that. It's just, you know, so much in this business requires trust and requires time, and relationships require trust and time. Listen, you don't when you meet your future spouse on the first date, you don't decide right then and there that, you know, you're going to get married. It takes time. It takes trust in that realm. And the same is with any type of meaningful relationship. If it happens overnight, I don't know how meaningful it is or how long-term it will be. You need to really size each other up. And most importantly, you need to bet each other up. And that goes to, you know, one of the most important lessons that I ever learned, which is the need to vet who you're working with. And that goes to the story of working with Matt Hutchinson, who was a fiduciary. He claimed himself to be a fiduciary expert, and that led him to stealing $3 million from a bunch of multiple employer plans. And, you know, to talk about it, you know, this isn't one of my favorite topics, but the reason I talk about it is because, you know, listen, I don't want to pretend, you know, of what happened and my role in it. But, you know, it was an interesting experience and a learning experience. And I failed myself because I didn't trust my gut. And the story of Matt Hutchinson was, Matt Hutchinson, it reminds me of an episode of Star Trek Next Generation. I forget the name of the episode, but anyway, it's like a beam light that flashes in front of the Enterprise. And all of a sudden, Commander Riker is no longer the second in charge, and a guy by the name of Commander McDuff was now the second in command. And of course, as we learn in the episode, it's that flash of light that puts McDuff on the bridge. But everybody's memory got erased, and they just were led to believe that McDuff was the commander and the second command on the Enterprise. Well, Matt Hutchinson, in the same situation, if you think about it, was Commander McDuff. He's the man who came out of nowhere. And he positioned himself as a fiduciary expert, because he was on an episode of PBS Frontline. I mean, that's what's his claim to fame. And I heard about Matt Hutchinson, I think the very first time when somebody told me that Matt was having a fiduciary training symposium in New York City. And this goes back, I think, to 2010 when I first started out on my own. And I was interested probably to attend or to speak. And, you know, I thought that would be a great opportunity to network. So Matt at the time was working with two brothers who were Boise, Idaho advisors. And they were running the event. And I reached out to them. And, you know, they were like, oh, we never had an ERISA attorney at one of these events or whatever it is. And, of course, they wanted me to attend. They wanted me to pay $1,500. And I said, no, I'm not going to pay $1,500. I thought I, you know, had the opportunity to speak or whatever it is, and I didn't go. So I think fast forward 2 years, he contacts me, Matt Hutchinson, or actually I contact some people that knew Matt Hutchinson, the folks at Brightscope, and Matt Hutchinson reached out to me and said that, you know, he's working on some certain situations, and he wants me to replace him as a fiduciary for one of his multiple employer plans. And also work with him on the legal aspects as a risk attorney on some other matters. I'm not going to talk about these other matters because even though whatever happened, we never did work on any attorney-client matters. The problem was is that I didn't see the setup. So anyway, I was replacing Matt Hutchinson on one of these MEPs. There were other MEPs as well. And Matt was telling me a story how, you know, 2012 is a presidential election coming up. And he says that he himself was being talked about as the next Secretary of Labor in an Obama 2 or a Mitt Romney administration. Quite honestly, when I heard him say that, I just wanted to break out laughing. Like, nobody's been talking about that. And when he said that, that was, to me, a telltale sign that I should have, you know, just run away. And I didn't. I didn't because, you know, I saw a potential opportunity. I thought based on serving as fiduciary of this MEP, there'd be some money in it. And then, of course, you know, being his ERISA attorney would be something, obviously, enticing. So I didn't trust my gut that the guy was really full of it. And, you know, I, you know, succeeded as a fiduciary to him. To the plan. And, you know, the way he talked, listen, I think there was a lot of arrogance to him. He made himself out to be this great, great expert. I remember he wanted all of us to meet him on the fly to go and meet him in Chicago to talk to him. And, you know, based on the lack of payments, lack of money that I made on it, within a couple weeks of the plan and whatever relationship, I decided that that isn't what I was going to do. I was going to fly to Chicago unless I was being paid to go to Chicago, whatever it is. But anyway, Matt wrote a press release that I signed off on, you know, replacing Matt as the fiduciary for one of his three MEPs. And I think everything is fine. And then Matt tells me that he's having a problem with these brothers from Boise, Idaho. And that I shouldn't really bother talking to them because, you know, they're just going to disparage Matt and just, you know, don't listen. It's got nothing to do with the plan. I'm like, okay, whatever it is. One of the brothers does call me and I said, you know, if you're going to disparage Matt, you know, I don't need to hear it. Whatever your problems are, that's between you and him. I think Matt had not paid him for the plan or for work on some of the plans, whatever it is. I'm like, I don't want to get involved. So I don't. So anyway, I hear from an attorney, well, two attorneys in particular, from a dentist in North Carolina, who says that Matt Hutchinson moved assets from one plan to another, and he was going to move those plan assets to the plan that I was running. And Matt was giving stories and cock and bull stories on, you know, what was going on. And I really had a tough time believing that. And I'm like, well, what, you know, the money didn't come to my plan. What's this got to do with me? You know, and I'm just like not in the position to go, you know, snooping around. I brought it to Matt's attention and Matt, you know, was emphatic that the money was invested and there were some issues. And, you know, the attorneys for this dentist were like, well, you know, you have to go talk to the Department of Labor because if you don't talk to the Department of Labor, we think that, you know, you're involved in this. And I said, listen, your dispute is with Matt. Whatever transaction you're talking about happened 9 months before I even arrived here. And right now I don't have any resources to go and go after him for assets that never went into my plan. So anyway, Matt was very, very evasive. Matt was saying, you know, I talked to the Department of Labor in Washington. They're on it. Drop it. Don't bother. I'm going to deal with it myself. And the story won't go away because you know, thanks to this dentist popping up, there are other plan provider, other adopting employers who raise the same issues that they do about Matt and the money. And it was, you know, not something I could ignore. And I'm like, Matt, you know, you have to come clean. Where's the money? They want to know. And you're making a worse situation by not being transparent. So, you know, I really didn't know what to expect. I was working with some other people on the plan, another advisor in Pittsburgh, and then another fiduciary. And I was getting, you know, really antsy about this because it just didn't seem right. You know, when I put away money into an escrow account, the money's in the escrow account. You know, somebody just gave me a check for $30,000 to pay some fees. I put it in the escrow account. Tomorrow, if they want to see it, I have it. If I give them a cock and bull story, then, you know, then they have cause to worry about. So the problem with Matt Hutchinson, where I knew that something was wrong, is when he said, I will talk to the person, I will put on the phone the person that has the money, the assets. He has it in a illiquid asset, and you'll talk to him on the phone. And right then and there, I knew that something was up. When somebody says to you, I want to put so-and-so, I want to put this person on the phone, doesn't name them. Already the Brooklyn in me suggests that whoever he was going to get on the phone was a phony. And then at that point, I decided to talk to the Department of Labor because, listen, as a fiduciary for a plan, I can't be seen as working with somebody who might have stolen plan assets from not my plan, but other plans. So I was more than forthcoming with the Department of Labor, told them everything I knew. Of course, Bloomberg and some of the other newspapers were investigating, and I, of course, cooperated with those articles. And, of course, it's a little bit embarrassing when you have this press release that I didn't write, that Matt Hutchinson wrote, you know, saying all these nice things about Matt, and when he's accused of being a thief, you know, it's bad. Because it's thrown back in your face that you made a mistake by saying nice things about somebody who ended up stealing millions and millions of dollars. And the problem here was, you know, I had Matt removed from all the plan that I was working with at all. And the story slowly was dying down, but the Department of Labor was investigating it. And eventually, Matt Hutchinson fought these charges. He is now still serving a 17-year sentence. And if you Google Matt Hutchinson, you will see that he's trying to say that he's been framed. But the truth is he stole $3 million from a bunch of MEPs. And, you know, he did it because he wanted to be a big shot in Idaho to take over some ski resort that went under. And he thought that the easiest way he can do that is to plunder plan assets for that. And then, you know, as the story goes, they was investigated, and he also used plan assets for purchases, a house and some other materials and whatnot. So the point here is that, you know, when you're working with any type of provider with TPA, listen, I know the Vantage Benefits story. How many, you know, I think if you would have Googled Jeff Ritchie and Vantage Benefits, or Jeff Ritchie by himself, you would have discovered he had problems with the SEC before he started Vantage Benefits. So the moral of the story is you can't take people at their word sometimes, especially when that word is questionable, especially when you don't know the background of the person. You're working with an advisor. You're working with a TPA. Make sure, you know, the head of the TPA wasn't running a Nigerian inheritance scam or, you know, served time for fraud. I know of a plan provider, I won't say their name, But let's just say the principal is using a phony name and was arrested or served jail time for writing phony checks or whatever it was. It does happen. And when you're dealing with millions and millions of dollars of retirement plan assets, you just can't take people's word for it as to who they are. You know, you're working with a broker, run a broker check on them. You're working with a TPA, find, you know, Google them on Google. Maybe something will turn out. Because it's really, really important. You just, you know, as a plan provider, you know, when I was working that Matt Hutchinson situation, I really thought that had I waited another week, my career could have been over. Just because I would have been impugned, my reputation was impugned because I worked with Matt Hutchinson. And I might have been perceived as trying to cover up for what he did. And one of the funniest things is, granted, the story broke. I was talking about it on LinkedIn, and the two brothers from Idaho, who were the advisors, were trying to throw dirt on me and saying, you know, we tried to bring it up to you, and you didn't want to listen. And I said, at no point did you say that Matt stole plan assets. All you were talking about was your dispute with him, which was none of my concern. If Matt didn't pay you, none of my business. If Matt stole plan assets, that would have been my business, and at no point did you say that. And I said, you know, the very first time I ever talked to you guys, you wanted $1,500 for me to speak at an event. And it says, you know, to me, it's the problem is you were involved with this a lot longer than I was, and you were involved with it at the time that the theft happened. And that was the end of the discussion and the end of the fighting. And I don't think those guys are in the business anymore, which is a shame. I thought they were pretty decent advisors, except for the fact that they were working with a guy who stole $3 million. But again, that's the problem with this business. You can take a lifetime. You could take a lifetime to build a reputation. But something like this, had I been involved with Matt Hutchinson, you know, 8 or 9 months earlier, I think my career would have been over just because of the stench of working with somebody who just stole money with no care in the world and hiding it. And, you know, he surrounded himself. He was very, very wise. He surrounded himself with people and tried to insulate them from other people so that they don't talk to each other and question what he was doing, why he needed these high-interest loans to buy this ski resort or whatever. There were a lot of questionable things that went on that I think you should Google. So next time you're on Google, you got some free time, text, type in Matt Hutchinson, Matthew Hutchinson, and, you know, see the criminal complaint, see the, even the, I just saw they had a court of appeals argument on why he should be set free and whatnot. It's a real good story and a real good lesson for all of us because, you know, what could have happened to me could happen to you. So I hope you enjoy this story down memory lane. And of course, like I said, next episode, Dana will be back. And check that401ksite.com for more information about that 401k conference and that 401k national conference. Take care. Bye.